If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn. I'm your host. We have a special episode of Whispers and Bricks today. Now, most people don't know that today, Thursday, October 7th, is International Male Breast Cancer Awareness Day. Now, like most people, I had no idea there was such a thing as male breast cancer. It wasn't until I met Ron Rappaport and heard his story, and my eyes were opened to this deadly disease that affects one in 833 men, that I decided to help spread the word about this cancer. So I invited Ron to come on the show, and he brought with him three people who will share their insights and their own personal bricks that they were hit with. Please help me welcome Ron Rappaport, Jeffrey Flynn, Brett Miller, and Pat Washburn. Welcome, everybody, and thanks for coming on the show. How's everybody doing?
Great.
Doing well.
Great. Awesome. Now, the commonality here is obviously you've all been hit with this brick called male breast cancer in some way, shape, or form. Now, Ron, let's start with you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the Male Breast Cancer Coalition, better known as MBCC, and what they do, and then tell us a little bit about your story.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ari, for having us on and for airing this on our first International Male Breast Cancer Coalition Awareness Day. So who is the Male Breast Cancer Coalition? We are a not-for-profit advocacy organization bringing everyone together to educate the world that men have breast tissue and breast cancer does not discriminate. We are 1% of the total breast cancer cases. In the United States, there are approximately 2,600 cases a year diagnosed, and we lose approximately 500 men a year to the disease. Compare that with testicular cancer, 10,000 cases a year, and they lose less men. The reason being, there's a lot of stigma, there's a lot of embarrassment for men, and we're trying to get over that. The chances of getting male breast cancer, as you mentioned, is 1 in 833, up from the previous 1 in 1,000. A good amount of our men are diagnosed at stage 3. They waited too long. Because of, like I said, the stigma or embarrassment. Our goal, Ari, is that no man will ever feel alone when hearing the words, you have breast cancer. We have a very informative website, www.malebreastcancercoalition.org. We have a downloadable self-exam card and video showing how to properly do a breast exam. We have a brother-to-brother program for newly diagnosed men, where we match them up with other men that have gone through a similar path. We have a virtual support group monthly, globally for all our men around the world and in the United States. And we also have a patient and caregivers support group, a virtual support group. We help our men get enrolled in clinical trials. We work with researchers to include our men in studies. We speak at schools, churches, radio, TV, podcasts like this to share our journeys. And we partner with cancer organizations throughout the world. We have even gotten ourselves exam cards published in many languages. And recently, we got it just translated into Hebrew. We lobby for more funding for clinical trials and research. And we attend conferences to educate ourselves from experts in the field. So my story, I'll make it as brief as I can. In late 2018, I noticed my left nipple was puckering in a little bit. And by New Year's Day, it got more pronounced. And I had a nasty fall that year. I had to go to the hospital. I had influenza B and I had dehydration. So that whole area was messed up for a long time. I cracked some ribs. So I showed it to my wife and my wife said, oh, you're going in for a mammogram. And I looked up male breast cancer signs and symptoms. And I saw nipple retraction was listed, but then I read, oh, the chances of getting that are 1 in 1,000. So I figured, probably nothing. It's probably healing up. Anyway, I went to the imaging center And that's where I first got introduced into what we call being a blue dot in a sea of pink. I filled out the forms at the imaging center. They asked me where my latest pregnancy was, pink robes, the whole thing. So I felt really out of place. Anyway, the lady called my name. I went up there and she said, "No, I need your wife." And I said, I showed her my white armband. She said, "Oh, we'll have to get you a room." Well, that was my introduction to being a blue dot in a sea of pink. So I walk into the room, they do the mammogram. The first thing she asked me, she says, "By the way, are you Ashkenazi Jewish?" I said, "Yeah." "Oh, well, you know, you got a higher risk of getting breast cancer." I said, "Oh, really? I didn't know that." Okay. So anyway, they did the mammogram on the right and the left. The left was the one that was in question. The right was fine. The left, they still weren't sure about. And even when I went to the doctor and they looked at it, they weren't sure anything was wrong. So they said, "Okay, we're going to go to the next room. We're going to do an ultrasound." The radiologist to come back in a few minutes. Well, the nurse came back. She said, "We don't know what it is. We think it might be a calcium deposit. We're not sure. We need a biopsy." They did a biopsy, and about 3 or 4 days later, they diagnosed me with infiltrating ductocarcinoma of the left breast. So, and I did a genetic test, and I do not have any BRCA gene mutations. So I don't know where I got it from, but February, the next month, they did a mastectomy of the left breast. They did some testing on my tumor, and my recurrence rate was very, very low. So they opted for no chemo, no radiation, and they put me on an anti-hormone therapy for 10 years. So
10 years?
10 years, yeah, tamoxifen.
Wow. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
So I caught it early. They told me I caught it early. It was stage one. The survival rate for stage 0, 1, and 2 is 90%. For stage 3, it goes down into the 70% percentile. And for stage 4, there's a 5-year survival rate of 20%. So the moral of the story is, guys who are listening to this, if there's anything you think is wrong, abnormal with your chest area, get it checked out. So I'm going to hand it off to who's ever next.
So, wow, that's an incredible story. You know what? It takes a lot of courage to step forward and to talk about it, because you're right. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. The first time I heard about it, I was a little embarrassed. You know, it's just one of those things. So I take my hat off to you that you're strong enough and you're positive enough in your own self that you can come forth and tell us about these situations. And because I'm sure there are many, many men out there that, like you said, are very, very embarrassed about it. And they may not take the time to check it out because they said, I don't have breast cancer. You know, one of those macho men. But Brett, let's go to you. And can you tell us about like the risk factors of male breast cancer? And then tell us a little bit about your story.
Yeah. So there's multiple risk factors that come into play for male breast cancer, age being one, a family history. Do you have a sister, a mother, a grandmother that has had breast cancer? You can also have first cousins or so in a relation that have breast cancer. Inheriting gene mutations to the BRCA1 or BRCA2. I know BRCA2 is more closely related to male breast cancer and prostate cancer. And another one's the Klinefelter syndrome, where a male has an extra X chromosome. It's a rare thing as well, but just, you know, with male breast cancer, it's a rare thing. But it's just, there's so many other different things. I think environmental is another thing. You know, high estrogen numbers, or eating estrogen high level foods like soy is one, can have effects on your body and stuff. So it's really you have to start knowing your family history. You have to, you know, everything in moderation, know what you're eating, what you're putting into your body. Cause you know, I was 17 when I first found the lump. I was going into my senior year of high school. I had received two physicals, or seen the doctor at least twice that year, one to get a physical to play football, another at the end of the year to receive some vaccination shots to go to college. And I still had this lump, so I brought it up to both doctors, and they both had essentially said that it was a calcium buildup. You're going through puberty. It'll dissipate and go away. It's nothing to worry about. Fast forward 7 years later, At 24 is when I was officially diagnosed, but I was only diagnosed because I had my parents pressuring me to go get a physical because they had asked if I'd still had the lump. And I said, well, yeah, it's, you know, hasn't gone away, but it hasn't really bothered me. One of the things that I had never really told them too much until close to the actual diagnosis, but I did have a discharge from my nipple for about a year and a half. You know, so, but I was thinking as a male, you know, you try to think of all the different ways as not to go to the doctor. So I was just thinking that it was the calcium buildup dissipating and going away. So the liquid and everything coming out, but, come to find after I was diagnosed that, with a lump and then a discharge, those are two of the top symptoms of male breast cancer. Like, you know, after I got diagnosed, I started this deep dark dive of everything and I saw this. So I wish that I would have been a little bit more aware of what I was, you know, dealing with beforehand. So then I could have been a little bit more proactive. But I was 24 when I was diagnosed. I went through, I did a mastectomy and then 4 rounds of chemotherapy. And it was going through this whole journey and talking to all these different doctors and hearing that I would be a lot of the first, you know, first mastectomy surgeries or first reconstructive surgery, and so on. And just being so young in it and talking to the doctors and them saying that, hey, if I was willing to share my story, they think that I could help out a lot of other men, being more comfortable with it because most men, they hear it and they think it's embarrassing. It's emasculating. They don't want to talk about it because, hey, they got diagnosed with breast cancer. Well, I'm a dude. I don't have boobs. I don't have breasts. I have pecs. It's chest. I puff their chest out, you know, strong and stuff, but it's breast tissue is what's getting affected. And that's what all these men need to understand is it's okay. That's the scientific term. That's what it is. Just come to terms with that's what it is. It is breast cancer, but you're not alone in this. Like we're all here. We're going to help you out. We're going to get you through this and stuff. So that's where I first started the Brett Miller 1T Foundation to start building the awareness and men and the youth, because I was so young, but just, you know, men and women and their teens, you know, they need to know their body. You're your own best advocate. So if you feel a lump, say something, go to a doctor, get a second opinion, a third opinion. And then in 2014, myself and Sherry Ambrose co-founded the Male Breast Cancer Coalition under the direction of my mother, Peggy. Between those two women, I know that we wouldn't be here where we're at today. They keep us all in line. And with the help of Ron and Pat and everybody else, I mean, we just, you know, we've turned global. And I know that I couldn't keep everybody in check on doing this. So I thank everybody for all their help and where we're at today.
Wow, that's amazing. I have to tell you, I have a 17-year-old. My son. And I can't imagine, you know, if, you know, something like that would have happened to him. And I know him. All right. He would have been no. He's too macho. You know, he doesn't, you know, he's not going to the doctor. He doesn't know. He's just that type of macho kid, whatever. Sometimes I have to put him in, you know, get him in line. Although as he gets older and older, it's getting a lot more tougher, you know, to do that. But again, you know, again, like Ron, I say to you the same thing. My hat's off to you. You know, it's just, I mean, listening to your whole story, you know, especially, I mean, you were young.
So I try to give you a little clip notes version and stuff. You can go read my story and all of our men's story on our website, malebreastcancercoalition.org. And those that we've lost, we have all their stories up there just so not every single one's the same. Everybody's a little different in their ways and stuff, but we all come back to the, hey, we were diagnosed with breast cancer and we're all here for each other.
Right. I hear. Now, Pat, you got a little bit of a different story. All right. Cause obviously you're not a male. I figured that out, by the way.
You're right.
Thank you. No problem. It's all those years of schooling that I had that, you know, that I learned that, and I'm not going to go into anything political, but tell us your story, or your husband's story actually. But it's right. It's obviously your story as well. So, give us an idea what, you know, talk about, the signs and the symptoms maybe that you worked with or found, and then give us, you know, your story. I'm sure everybody wants to hear that.
Well, the first thing that I tell the guys when I'm talking to them is I try to express to them what the signs and the symptoms are. They should be doing self-exams once a month, just like the women do. And when they do self-exams, they're checking for lumps. They need to check, they need to include the area around the collarbone as well as their underarms, because that's where our lymph nodes are. And you guys need to be checking. And the lumps can be small, they can be large, they can be hard, they can be soft. It doesn't matter. My husband did have a lump. However, he also had lipomas. He thought that it was probably just another lipoma, which is a fatty, non-cancerous mass. And so he wasn't worried about it. The lump never occurred to him. The second thing that I tell my men when I explain to them what they should be watching for, I tell them when they get out of the shower, is to stand in front of the mirror and look at themselves. Are both breasts about even? Is there a rash on one? Is there a dry patch of skin on one? If they notice something, they need to think back to how long it's been there. If they don't remember how long it's been there, they need to see a doctor about it, because that can be cancer coming through. The third thing is the nipples, and it surprises me how many of our men actually have this as the deciding factor for them and how they discovered their breast cancer. If the nipple starts to retract, if it starts to pull inward, that should not be happening. That's not a normal thing. And if that happens, it means that something is in there probably pulling it inward. The fourth thing is what Brett mentioned with his and having the drainage from the nipple. And it can be a clear drainage. It can be a bloody drainage. It can be a milky drainage. Now, those are the four most common things that I tell people. Some people have other symptoms that have come up. These are the four most common. And some people don't have any kind of symptoms. My husband, the only thing that he noticed was he had a pain in his arm and in his shoulder. And he was an avid golfer. So we attributed it to being something he did on the golf course. As it turned out, he was diagnosed in December of 16. And at the time he was diagnosed, because he didn't know men could get breast cancer. And so at the time he was diagnosed metastatic stage 4. It had already metastasized from his breast. He had 6 lesions in his liver. It was in both lungs. It was in his lymph nodes. It was in his bones, which was causing that pain in his arm. And he had 8 tumors in his brain. We had no idea anything was wrong. So that was in December of 16. 5 months later, in May of 17, he took his last breath. And so what I have done, you can see the car on the wall behind me. That was his car. That was the last one that he ever bought. And I had never heard of the Male Breast Cancer Coalition at the time. But I took his car and I had a wrap put on it. And in blue on the, or I'm sorry, in pink on the sides of it, it says, breast cancer does not discriminate. And underneath of it in blue, it says men too. And on the hood of the car, they put a picture of my husband. It was taken at Christmas time when he was being diagnosed. And that was actually not my intention to put his picture on. But it has been a very good thing for me to have on there. When I'm talking to these strange men that have no idea who I am, I can point out that picture and I can say, you know what? 5 months later, he was gone. And I travel the United States talking to people about breast cancer. Since my husband died about 4.5 years ago, I have put 75,000 miles on my car. I just got back. Brett mentioned his co-founder, Sherry Ambrose. And Sherry and I just got back from a 15-state trip to the western half of the United States talking to people about male breast cancer.
That is so amazing. I'm going to tell you that I went on, you know, the different websites and I saw the car online and it was absolutely amazing. It was incredible. I just want you to tell us One quick story that I read about you having some trouble with the law.
The one in South Carolina. So I was driving down the interstate in South Carolina with my car, and traffic was not up to speed. So I went around everybody, and I get to the front, and there was a state trooper. And so he still wasn't up to speed. And so I took off, and I was driving the speed limit, maybe a couple miles an hour over. And my telephone rang. And I answered it, and it ended up being the manager from the hotel we had just come from the night before. And I said, you know, I've got a trooper on the road behind me. Let me pull off the interstate and I'll talk to you. And so I signaled to pull off the interstate. I had passed a trooper probably 15 or 20 miles before this. And I signaled to come off the interstate, and the trooper followed me off. And he, as I turned on my blinker to actually get off of the exit ramp, he chirped his siren at me. So I pulled into the driveway of a field, and he pulled in behind me, and he came up to the car. He greeted me and the lady that was traveling with me. And then he leaned down right beside me and he said, I need to know, what are the signs of male breast cancer? And so I told him the four that I just told you. And I asked him, I said, are you having a concern? And he said, yes. So I've not heard back from him again. I gave him all of the details about the Male Breast Cancer Coalition, told him that we had a ton of resources, asking to please go in and see a doctor. But the only reason he stopped me was because of the car.
Right, exactly. And I love that story. I think it's a great story, and it's very powerful. And, you know, it's just, it's one of those things that you don't know who's got it. You don't know who's going to be affected by it. And like you said, if it wasn't for that car, he would never have known. And who knows?
Yeah.
But that's amazing. Jeff, how are you? You've got an interesting story. And it's, I think it's something that we share because it has to do with 9/11.
Yeah, we have not as close to the towers as you were, but yes, I was down there the day of, and quite some time after 9/11. I actually, when I saw the first plane go in, I was on both planes, I was on the 37th floor of a Goldman Sachs building, and I called my wife and I said, you know, just a natural reaction. I said, I'm going to go down there and see if I can help. And she implored me not to go. One of the people from Goldman was a fire chief from Lynbrook out here. And he went and he came back all ash. And this is before the towers crumbled. And he said, don't go down. He said, people are jumping. It's really a bad scene. Anyway, I watched both the planes go in. I did watch the towers crumble as I walked to my office. There was no transportation or phone service at the time. And I supported the global financial community, and I spent months down there trying to normalize their businesses after the disaster. So in implementing disaster recovery plans and traveling from site to site. So as I tell my story, my company and the Environmental Protection Agency said it was safe to breathe the air down there. So I walked around down there maskless, and so I also noticed a lump in my chest, and I also had a couple of lipomas, and I had a lipoma removed from my back when I was 23 or 24, and it was nothing. So I just assumed that it was either a lipoma or it was a swollen gland, and I ignored it. So it wasn't until we went down to Sanibel Island on a vacation with some friends and my wife, where I took my shirt off at the beach, and my wife said, your nipple is inverting. You're going to the doctor when we get back. So, and I did, and I had a needle biopsy. And even though the doctor said 99.9%, it's not cancerous, came back 3 days later that it was cancerous. And I had a mastectomy. And while you're on the table, they check your sentinel lymph nodes. And if your sentinel nodes or guard nodes are cancerous, they take as many as they can reach. So they took 36 lymph nodes out of my chest and my underarm, and 35 of them were cancerous.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so I really thought at that point that it was going to be difficult to survive this. But I was sent to an oncologist, and I was put on a regimen of chemotherapy and then 7 weeks of radiation therapy, in which it, by the end of that, I'm fair-skinned. I was fairly well burned up and blistered. But I made it through. And I went back to work, and I was really looking forward to getting back to work after spending like 9 months in the house. At any rate, and life returned pretty much to normal with the exception of my surgery scars. So, and I was also put on a regimen of tamoxifen for 10 years. So in any case, everything was going fine, and I was seeing my oncologist every quarter. And I went in for a quarterly checkup, and he was pressing in at my clavicle or my collarbone. And he said, I feel something here. I'd like you to go get a sonogram. The sonogram showed an abnormality. And it turned out it was the same cancer. And it was inoperable because it was close to facial nerves and blood vessels. So I had to be put on a regimen of Ibrance and Faslodex, which is a hormone injection. I get 2 injections in the buttocks every month for the rest of my life, essentially. But I was diagnosed in 2014. I just had my 9th anniversary on October 1st of my mastectomy surgery. And I'm still standing. I'm still here. So very grateful, because I do know a number of men that have not been so fortunate. And my life is, it's about 95% normal. So really no pain. I just, you know, I have some, I'm tired sometimes from the medication, some fatigue. But I did, I signed up with an attorney downtown, as there's a 9/11 health commission. Yeah. And a victims compensation fund for those that were below Canal Street. On the day of 9/11 and the subsequent days, if you were there, lived there, were in school there, there were monetary awards, and there were the health fund assists you in your medical copays.
Right.
Now my medication is $14,000 a month. That's just for the Ibrance, and then the injections are close to $5,000. So it's close to $20,000 a month, and I wound up after 65 in the, which by the way, I was 58 and a half when I was diagnosed, and I was told I was young. So Brett, you were very young.
Yeah.
in any case, so just getting back to the fund, I signed up with him, and I did get a monetary award, and they pay my co-pays, thank God, because that would have been life-changing for us. And what he had asked me to do, the attorney had asked me, he said, the New York Post wanted to do a story about male breast cancer. Would you be interested in speaking to that? And I said, sure. So they did an expose on me. I was on the second page of the New York Post, and a full page, and they sent a photographer, took some pictures. And the day after that, every news station, radio station, newspaper wanted to speak to me. So yeah. It was very embarrassing in the beginning to be a male with breast cancer. But I did. I got over it, and I've been hawking the same things that have been discussed here. Check yourself. Do the monthly self examinations. Even visiting doctor's offices. I mean, my internist. Same thing when he looked at the lump on my chest, 99.9%. I mean, I felt very comfortable that there was nothing wrong. So I've tried to get the word out through the years that men have breasts too, and to check yourself and be proactive with this. If you feel anything, get to the doctor.
Right. Right. That's, well, we're glad you're still with us.
Thank you.
Again, thank you again for stepping out of your comfort zone in order to talk about this, because it really, really is very important. So lastly, I'd like to bring Ron back to discuss like goals for change, some takeaways, and most important contact information. Because I know there are guys out there that are suffering with this malady, and either they're too embarrassed or they don't know what to do. They don't know who to call. They don't know where to go. So all this information is very, very important. So Ron, can you come back to us, please?
I just want to add a few things that I just thought about. People used to call this an old man's disease. It's not an old man's disease. We have men in the coalition all ages. So if you ever read that male breast cancer is an old man's disease, it's not. And I do want to also mention that people in the Black and Brown community tend to get this disease earlier and it's more aggressive. So be aware of that. And I did want to also mention before I go into goals for change and takeaways, I too was embarrassed in the beginning, Ari. I had an incident where I went into a dental office. I had to have some work done before my surgery. I told them I was having breast cancer surgery. I was too embarrassed to say, I didn't say breast cancer. I said cancer surgery. I was too embarrassed to say breast cancer surgery. Right. Anyway, I walked in and the girl sat me down. She said, I understand you're having cancer surgery tomorrow. What kind of cancer surgery? I said, breast cancer. And she started laughing. Now, I don't know if she was, you know, she thought I was making a joke or whatever. I don't know if it was malicious or not, but a bulb went off in my head. And I said, you know what, if I get through this, men shouldn't have to put up with this. I'm going to advocate for the Male Breast Cancer Coalition. So that's how I got into it. But as far as goals for change, what we'd like to see is a reduction in the sexual stereotyping of this disease as a female disease. We'd like to see a degendering of the language across all mediums to acknowledge that the disease does exist in men. And we'd like to see more funds spent for research on male breast cancer. We know the researchers tell us that there are differences between male and female breast cancer. And right now we're basically being treated with, you know, mostly the same protocols as women, especially the tamoxifen regimen when you're all done, and same thing that women are doing. And we'd like to see a screening protocol for men with a hereditary predisposition to breast cancer, such as a family history of breast, ovarian, or prostate cancer. And again, the main takeaways, know your family history regarding cancer, know the signs and symptoms of male breast cancer, check your breasts monthly for any abnormalities, and guys, be your own best advocate. If the slightest concern arises, see your healthcare provider. If needed, get a second or third opinion if you're not satisfied about your concerns being addressed. Very important, it's nothing to play around with. You just heard some of our guys and what it's like. It's not fun having male breast cancer. You want to get it taken care of if you have it right away. That's the key.
Wow. And again, most important contact information.
Yes, absolutely. Our website is malebreastcancercoalition.org. Our Twitter is @MBCC_MHBT. Our Facebook page is Male Breast Cancer Coalition, LinkedIn, Male Breast Cancer Coalition. If you have any questions about male breast cancer, you can email us at malebreastcancerquestion@gmail.com. And we are on Instagram at Male Breast Cancer Coalition.
Wow. You know, again, my hat's off to all of you for coming and, you know, sharing your stories. I know, as all of you have mentioned, at one point in time or another, you were embarrassed by it, but came to realize that this is a deadly disease and that, you know, you shouldn't be embarrassed by it and you need to step up. And if you're a male and, you know, you should check yourself out just to make sure that you're okay. And if you're not okay, please, please, please go see a doctor. I'm going to be honest. My daughter is an OBGYN and she is a huge advocate for, you know, going to the doctors and seeing doctors. You know, she's seen a lot, you know, on the women's side. So it is so, so important to be proactive. Make sure you do what you need to do in order to protect yourself. And again, thank you guys so much for appearing on the show. And I just hope that we're going to get this, the word out there. Good luck to all of you with everything, with, you know, the coalition and with taking care of yourselves and your families. And thank you so much for appearing on the show. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and I'm your host, Ari Shomer. Until next time, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now. Guys,
so that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.